Welcome to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast, your home for insights and insider knowledge about hypnotic change work. With your hosts, control practitioners and hypnotists, Nicole Mazzucato and Anthony Gitch.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Hypnotic Healers. I'm Nicole Mazzucato, and as always, I'm here with my friend and co-host Anthony Gitch all the way over there. Our usual disclaimer before we get started, neither Anthony nor I nor our guest today are licensed medical professionals, psychologists, psychiatrists or anything of the sort. So please do not make any changes or alterations to any medications or treatments that you're on based on the conversation you hear here today. Take what you like, leave the rest. While you're leaving stuff, drop us a message, leave us a like, a love, a heart, a thumbs up, whatever you fancy, get in touch. Let us know how you're getting on with the podcast. Share us about, because sharing is caring. And let's dive straight in. Hello, Anthony.
Hello, dear. It's always good to talk to you.
I know, that's because I'm fabulous.
You are.
Nice to see today. You
too. And today we have with us someone else. In fact, this is the only person we've had as a return guest.
This is our first returner.
This is our first return guest after he was on the first year. This is year number three.
So I don't know. He was only our second guest. He was
actually correct. Yes.
Second guest and our first returner.
Yeah. So welcome back, everybody. Mr. Howard Cooper. We're excited to have you here, Howard. It's always nice to see you.
I am so pleased to be back and flattered to be back. And maybe you'll think twice about having return guests after today.
It's been two years. Yeah.
It has been 2 years. Yeah. I think it straddles my midlife crisis, my midlife confidence, sorry. For those of you who can't see, I think when you first met me, I didn't have a man bun or a Viking beard or piercings. And, you know, I turned between, since the last recording and now, I've turned, I passed 30-10 and decided to, you know, and in all seriousness, people have said, have you had a midlife crisis? And I genuinely do think I had a midlife confidence where I just got to that age and I thought, screw it, I'm going to live the way I want to live and I don't care.
Because you pierced your ear as well, didn't you?
Well, actually twice now, but yes. Not me personally, but I've had it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you did that late in life. Holy crap. I was shoving pins through my ears and nose when I was 10.
Oh, wow. Well, that's, yeah, no, I've been pretty straight laced until, but always, I mean, I've always been a bit alternative. And then I got to the age of what, 17, 18, 19, and then decided that if I wanted to actually work, what would people think? If I had piercings and, grew my hair or had a beard. So I sort of toned myself down. And it's funny when people say, have you gone off the rails? The truth is I've gone back on the rails that I was always on, you know.
Right on.
So
there you go. There you go.
And welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back. And it's good to be back.
How many more piercings are we to expect?
What, that I can show you?
Oh, yeah.
Ouch. I don't know.
So how are you?
Yeah. How's everything going? I mean, are you still unicycling across the UK? What's going on?
Yeah. Things are good. I did, as you rightly point out, I did a 60, it turned out to be 66 and a half kilometer unicycle ride last year to raise money for children's mental health. And I don't ask me whether I've unicycled since, because the answer might be no, because I got off and thought, oh my word, it was probably one of the hardest physical and emotionally exhausting things I've ever done, but totally worth it. And I am thinking in terms of just the themes of midlife confidence again, of getting my first tattoo, which will probably be a unicycle. Somewhere.
Very nice. I have seen the unicycle people, and that is an what do you call it? A 4x4 worthy, what do you call it? All terrain worthy unicycle.
Yeah. Although, I mean, 4x4, maybe a 1x1.
1x1, but that's it's a chunky tire you've got on that thing.
It's a big mountain tire. And it's pretty impressive.
The monster truck of unicycles. Cool. Yeah.
It certainly is. Yeah. Absolutely.
It is. So apart from unicycling around...
Did you accomplish your goal? Did you accomplish what you wanted to accomplish with the ride?
I mean, the ride was really to, the goal was, can I get from A to B and still be alive to tell the tale afterwards? So that was like pretty much it. And if we can raise some money and awareness on the way, then great. And yeah, it's part of me deciding to do something a little bit crazy. I wanted to do something, in all seriousness, that was a year before that. I thought, what would be like a ridiculous thing to do? And me and a friend got together. We went, let's take on something that just seems totally impossible. And then can we just chip away at something as a goal and then do something that we all think is a little bit crazy, but also just so that we can always look back on it and go, oh, it's like a reminder of the fact that you can persist and persevere at something and do something that you absolutely, at first glance, think is unreasonably impossible and totally unachievable, but yet you get there. And for me, whether it was unicycling or anything else, just, you know, also I got two kids and I liked the idea that they were seeing me go out and have something to work on and work towards and chip away at a goal. And eventually, you know, and then they drove down, celebrated, and they were there at the finish line and we rode through and they were cheering. And, you know, it was also about sort of doing something as being a role model, I guess, as well for them. Maybe we talk about that part, not the role model of then getting off the unicycle and not exercising for a year and demonstrating that side of things. But before that, I was a good role model.
It's the build up that counts, right?
Absolutely. But yeah, no, then still doing lots of work helping people therapeutically, doing a lot of work with anxiety and helping other therapists learn new skills as well.
But you also, it was last year, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, you released a children's book.
Oh, goodness me.
Russell in the Lead.
Was that not on the last recording?
That was the last recording. Yeah, he had just done all of that.
Oh, had you already released it 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I thought you Russell released
was
it.
Was it November 21? November 21. But yeah, I mean, you know, maybe it's due for a re-release.
There we go.
A follow-up.
Yeah, it was a kid's book. Yeah, it was. In fact, someone asked me today at my kid's school when I went to pick them up, are you going to do another one? And I, no. No, I mean, I might do. It takes a lot of work to stay. It's like a huge amount of work in terms of working with the illustrator and getting the pictures ready. And then, and unless you're, I don't know, selling millions of the thing, you're not doing it because it's a financial key to success. It's just a really lovely project. I enjoyed every moment of it. And, you know, if some children, you know, are helped along the way, because of course, as you remember that, it was all about, can we help children understand that how the mechanism of anxiety works, how sometimes we become afraid of things that pose no threat? So I've had some nice feedback from it in terms of, you know, parents saying they read it to their kids and then, you know, the kids having some like epiphany about, oh, I'm not really scared of the dark, am I? I'm just scared of my thoughts.
Mm. Right on.
And that's really cool when kids who are like 5 or 6 getting that.
Yeah, I mean, if you can even help one kid, that is right on. I'm glad that it's out there and available for folks. What are you doing new these days?
So I have a process that I've kind of been working on for the last couple of years, and called the Willingness Ladder, and it's something that sort of arose out of working with the themes of seeing through the illusion of people's thinking. So I've been heavily influenced by the work of Jürgen Rasmussen. He has something called the psychological illusion model. And I sort of found a way of packaging up something or sequencing up some ideas that seem to have kind of taken off. And I sort of played around with it with clients for a long time and realized, crikey, I'm kind of keep doing this and it's really effective. It's really working well. And I'm applying it to loads of different areas. And so I kind of packaged it up and found a way of being able to share it with people through an online course. And I've been literally bowled over by both the number of people who have got access to it, but more importantly, the feedback that I've got from people all around the world who are using this thing. And applying it in many ways, I might even argue more effectively than I seem to be, you know, and that's always amazing. It's like this thing has kind of birthed, it's got a life of its own now. And, you know, I'm getting messages from people saying I use this willingness ladder with someone who, for example, an old gentleman an elderly man who stopped playing the guitar because he's too worried about how he sounds because he's got dementia and he's not as good as he used to be.
Mm.
And we went through this process and he's like, he's now playing again. And not only he's now happy because he's playing, but his wife who accompanies him and sings is now happy again. And nice. Someone sent me that message and I will confess, I did tear up because I had this moment of realization that something that a process that I've kind of taken someone through or developed is now touching other people's lives. And I've never even met these other people. It's like vicariously just putting good stuff out into the world. And yeah, I feel really quite excited by that. I'm keen to see where it goes next.
It's a beautiful course. You've done an amazing job putting it together. It looks great. Like the whole course looks really, really good. It's really quite interactive as well. You know, people are very much interacting and commenting on the different sections and really giving feedback.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, you've done such a great job putting it together. I was just finished. You're welcome. And I was watching. I haven't quite finished it yet. I watched your demo with the American lady with the man named L.
Yeah. yes. Oh, yeah.
I was quite curious as to how. Can I give a bit of context here?
Please do. Yeah, fascinated.
So the context is, this was an online training that Howard was doing, and I believe she was a therapist as well, right?
Yeah. And it was actually that clip, that demo was taken, it was the very first time I'd shared the willingness ladder process with therapists at large, and she volunteered for a demo.
Right. So she said that she was getting annoyed by who I assume is her partner, that he didn't understand her or something like that. And she's got like these musts, what you like to call masturbations. He must, what was it? Yeah. He must understand me or something like that. And the fact that he doesn't drives me nuts. So you took her through the process and you got her to where you wanted to get her to. She got to the outcome. There was a part of me that was questioning then. So the thought process has then sort of crumbled, not crumbled, but you know, she's kind of detached herself from the pain of the thought process. There's a part of me then thinking, where did she go after that? In, you know, because obviously, I don't know where my question is going, but I was kind of wondering, where did she go after that? Did you get any feedback from her later on?
It's a great question. And I'm going to share two things. One, I think it happened a while ago, and I think we have spoken a couple of times since. And I think she shared that things seem to have moved in a useful direction. I can't, in all honesty, remember what that direction is. But one thing I would say is that there is this element of, and just to give some context, if we go back to this idea that our suffering is coming from experience, and experience is essentially our thinking, it's coming from the images in our head, the words that we're saying to ourselves, the sensations in our body. And if we interpret any of these as problematic or we resist, we'll likely end up in some form of psychological suffering. And then what happens is that if we can get to a place where actually we can have these images, words, or sensations, and there isn't that same level of physical response of suffering to it, that there'll be some psychological relief. The problem is that then sometimes, and I think this may be where your question was kind of orientating to, which is, well, what then? Like if life on the outside is still like, you know, people are treating us in a shitty way, for example, but then we've just sort of made peace with, well, it's okay, I can be treated like that.
Yeah.
Are we not accepting, except sort of rolling over and going, well, I don't need to change anything. I can just change my own thinking. And I wonder if, yes, where you were going with this is, well, what actions are you now going to take? And is it not okay to sort of like engage with making changes in your life? on the outside, or so I think, and I'm sure I wrote an analogy recently about this, but acceptance. In fact, I was actually talking with Dr. Stephen C. Hayes, the guy behind the founder of acceptance and commitment therapy, about this recently. And
ACT, right?
We were talking, yep. ACT, yeah. We were talking about the word acceptance, and how the word acceptance and the origins of it have somehow changed, and the meaning that we put by it has changed. These days, it's almost sort of, the word acceptance is seen as synonymous with sort of to tolerate. Hmm. I'll just tolerate this. I'll accept and just resign myself to the fact that all this stuff is going on. Whereas actually accept, and I can't remember the etymology of it, was actually, it's actually meant as a gift. As in, when you say, here's a gift, you go, I'll accept that. And it was actually designed as you're receiving the gift of noticing and being okay with your situation. And the subtle difference is that if you can see it as a gift of I'm at one with my internal process, you then become in a much more resourceful state to make the outward changes that you need. Mm-hmm. And it's also acknowledging, I think the word, a better word is to kind of acknowledge just the truth of where you're at. So a simple analogy would be if there's a kid who's going, I must be the fastest in the class at running. But like, there'd be a huge amount of suffering if every time he loses a race, he's like just going, no, no, I must be the fastest. I must be the fastest. Whereas actually accepting or acknowledging the fact is, no, no, you do kind of lose at the moment. And you kind of accept that that is where you're at from a place of openness. Now you can actually go, okay, instead of pretending that I have to be or I might not be, you can go, right, well, what can I do now to get where I want to go, which is, can I practice? Can I get fitter? Can I? But you're now in a resourceful state to be able to do that. I'm kind of reminded of Byron Katie's quote, which is, I love Byron Katie.
And I was going to say, a lot of what you're doing seems to me is that true? Is that true sort of behind, I could feel the energy behind what you were talking about.
This is,
you know, and the whole acceptance thing, right? It's the same confusion people have about the word surrender. It doesn't mean to be walked upon. It doesn't mean that you just take what's coming. It means that you have a different understanding of what to do with the energy behind it.
Right. And that you accept that as the gift.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
So my favorite quote is one that I often use. It is, you know, if you fight, it's her quote, if you fight with reality, you'll lose.
Yes.
But only 100% of the time. And it's just that, like, you can't fight with what is. Like, you can pretend. And an example that I give on the course is this idea of, like, I have this horrible habit. I've got a whiteboard in my office and I've got these pens. And I often, I'm a fiddler. I mean, if you can't see me, but I will move around. I gesticulate a lot, you know. But I'll leap up to the whiteboard. I'll do something and I'll put the pen down. And then I put the pen in my pocket in the drawer. And when I go back to get the pen, I can't remember where I put it. And I'm like always looking around, where's the flipping pen? And I would love if I could just let the pen go and it would float over to the whiteboard. Wouldn't that be amazing? It would make my life immeasurably better if I could just place, just wherever I am, let the pen go, just float. But unfortunately, we have this thing called gravity, and gravity affects my pen, whether I like it or not. And I could spend my life going, gravity must not affect this pen. It must not. But likely that's not going to be fruitful or help me adapt to the situation effectively at all. But a good place to start would be to at least acknowledge the truth of it, which is I don't control gravity and it does have an effect on this pen. But so many people's problems come from not acknowledging or having the illusion that they can control something that they really can't control.
Right.
Mm. It's like them trying to control gravity in some capacity.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you apply the willingness ladder to all sorts of things, intrusive thoughts, anxiety, smoking, in this case, somebody who's being irritated by their partner.
Right. Yeah. And ultimately, it all comes down to being, we're already applying it to the same thing, which is someone's internal thinking.
Right.
Yeah.
And people will have a set of thoughts that they do not want, that are giving them something unpleasant. And when I say thoughts, I include sensations in there. So I believe that we have images, words, and sensations are all labeled thought. But isn't this true that, you know, as change workers, almost everyone that we see will come with us, come to us, because they have some images, words, or internal sensations that they want rid of.
Mm-hmm.
That's whether it's the cravings for cigarettes. Someplace,
emotionally, physically, spiritually. Right. Yeah, psychologically, there's an emotional there's a disconnect somewhere.
And more and more on, I remember thinking this years ago that I think, and I just keep noticing it more and more, which is, put it this way. If my son comes running into my bedroom and says, "Daddy, Daddy, there's a monster under my bed," how effectively would it reassure him if I said, "George, there's no monster, but whatever you do, don't look it in the eye"? He'd go, "Well, sorry?" But like, so it's real. But I think that people often do this, and that I am absolutely convinced that 99% of the time, the solution the client thinks they need is the problem. So if someone turns up and says, "I have this intrusive thought, Howard, get rid of it." The reason why it's coming up so much, or it's marked out as a threat, is because they've decided and orientated towards the fact that it's a threat. They're kind of engaged in that, "I keep trying to get rid of it." And therefore, what does the brain do? It goes, "Well, why do you keep trying to get rid of it? It must be a threat. Therefore, we're going to pop it back up on the radar and keep popping it up until eventually," and it's really going to look like the solution is, you as therapist, as change worker, have to get rid of it. And my concern is if we buy into those frames, actually all we're doing is giving them ammunition to drive more, put more red flags in these things. And so the willingness ladder is all about actually just how do we do change work, but outside of that kind of frame that they've set, how do we help them see something entirely different?
Well, isn't that our job? I mean, I call it kind of prism work. When I'm working with the client, it's like, you know, your challenge, your issue, your thoughts, whatever it is that's brought you here, it's my job to kind of take that and shine a light into that crystal, and then let's see all of the facets. Look at the millions of facets. When we actually look at all of the sides of this, what are all the potentials, right? And what are, I think that when, right, once we do that, we can, we create opportunity, we create the ability to see what the possibilities are beyond the experience in the moment.
Right, totally agree. And I like that idea of facets through a prism and seeing. I think the brain gets kind of caught in one rut, and it's like, it's just, we have to do this. This is just it. And it's adding options. I used to ask people this question sometimes, which is, have you ever been to a pizza restaurant? And like 99% of the time, they'll go, yeah, of course. And then the question is, well, why didn't you order sushi? And they're like, it's not on the menu. And for me, our job often as change workers is we're menu writers. We're literally adding different items onto the menu so that in the point of decision, they, instead of just having, I can only order pizza, they've got lots of different opportunities of different places to take something. And I kind of like to think of myself as the menu, as a menu writer. We're writing menus for people's behaviors, you know, and we can't say you're going to do this now, but if they've got more options and different ways of thinking about it, then they're likely to make some better choices rather than be stuck in a rut of thinking that doesn't lead them anywhere.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, sometimes I'll tell my clients, you've got the opportunity. You've got a clean page every day. You can take yesterday's news and splatter it on today's page and then try to fill in the rest of it with something nice and new and positive for yourself. Or you can just start with the blank page and just start creating, right? I mean, it's an option that we have every day. What are we going to carry forward with us? What are we going to splatter on that page and then try to work around?
Right. Absolutely. Love it. Love it. I might use that.
The thing I really love about I really appreciate the willingness, Neda, and the stages. So it's made up of six questions, right? And you're taking them through this process, which is it seems so simple, right? On the face of it, it seems so simple, but you've really done a deep dive into the actual process behind these six. Very simple. And when I say very simple, I don't mean to diminish the process, right? They are essentially six very simple questions.
They really are. They really are. Yeah.
Mm. But you've done... Go on.
No, I was going to say, it's funny because some people have said they're really simple questions, yet there's an artistry to doing them and a way of presenting them that enables it to work. On the face of it, you could just see them and go, oh, okay, great. Oh, yeah, I get those. Yeah, fine. But yes, there is some understanding underpinning all of it and then weaving it together and then delivering it to help people get it that makes all the difference.
You know? And the key piece is I think there's a delay. Go on.
No, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, for me, the questions really are, it's all about how can we take someone from I don't want this experience all the way through to I can look forward to it. You know, which is really bizarre when you have someone who comes in and says, you know, as, like, for example, a needle phobic came to see me. And, you know, even just the thought of the needle having an injection, just total tension. And it's really funny because, you know, half an hour later, they're sitting there and you're saying, you know, just picture having an injection, having the needle pierce the skin. And they're sitting there calm as anything, eyes closed, going, and they say out loud, huh, from a place of, and they sound congruent as well. They go, I can look forward to these thoughts. Mm-hmm. And there's something amazing about that. Because they never look like they would ever get there in half an hour or so. They always seem totally...
Yeah. And that's you know, very much the key, isn't it? And you say this in the training. I've heard you say it a number of times before. Getting them to a stage of acceptance of that the thoughts are going to be there, that thoughts can be there, rather than this place of, oh, I need to get rid of them. I need to kind of run away from them. I need to sort of, again, putting up that space of resistance and just kind of, we've had this conversation before, haven't we, Howard, about this toxic positivity and living in la la land.
Mm. Well, let me show you my socks.
They're always going to be there.
I don't know if you can see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not allowed to say that word. But my I'm wearing socks. I'm wearing socks that day to say yes, that say fuck positivity. I kind of rail against toxic positivity. Mm. And I think it's positivity, I think, can be hugely powerful and hugely useful. It's not that I'm tongue in cheek when I say screw positivity totally. I think it has a place, but I think there is a dangerous side to it, which is if ultimately thoughts just appear and we don't really control our thinking because we just have millions of thoughts that just keep popping up and down, then if we have a rule like I must never have any negative thoughts about something and we don't control our thinking, we're going to end up in a huge amount of suffering. And I also think a lot of people end up, and I think you might even have been playing the clip as your phone glitched before we started recording and my voice was coming out of your phone. I don't know why, but I think I heard my dulcet tones talking about giving the example of, you know, I've worked a lot with fear of flying because years ago I used to work with Virgin Atlantic as the presenter on their course. So lots of people know me from that. And one of the things that phobic flyers often come and say to me is things like, Howard, make me like all the people who are okay flying, who, quote, never have a negative thought about flying.
Yeah.
And it's because that's what they think. They think the difference between the people who are afraid of flying versus not afraid of flying is that they have all these negative thoughts of crashing and what if we die and what if there's turbulence and what if we, versus the people who are okay flying who never have a negative thought. And so you give them homework. You say, between now and when I next see you, just do an experiment for me. Go and find someone who's okay flying and say to them, you're okay flying. Be honest. Have you ever had a negative thought about flying? And watch how they respond. Because here's what they'll do. They'll go, of course. And then you get curious. You say, oh, really? Well, then what technique do you use in order not to freak out? And they'll go,
Exactly.
It's true.
Because but the thing is, it never even occurred to them they had to do a technique because they never even interpreted the thought as dangerous, as problematic. And if you said to them, like, would you be willing to have that thought? Why not? It's just a thought. Like, what difference does it make? And, you know, it's like, I think it's really important for people to know that the world doesn't work based on what we think. Like, I don't think that there's a pilot flying 35,000 feet. Imagine this, 35,000 feet. Pilot comes over the tannoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your pilot speaking. Just wanted to let you know, this is was going to be a wonderfully safe flight, but unfortunately, Ethel on row 13F has just imagined we're crashing, so we're going to have to nosedive. I'm sorry, but thank you for flying with us.
Like, it's ludicrous. You know, just because Ethel thinks it doesn't make it real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I think that whole, like, you know, this idea of trying to get rid of negativity, it is when we don't control thoughts that appear, I think is going to lead us down a very strange place into suffering, psychologically speaking.
Yeah, very much also coming from meditation, what thoughts we follow and develop, you know, follow and allow to evolve in that sense, you know. Okay, so there's thousands of thoughts coming through, and I think that a misconception about meditation is that we're trying to stop all thinking, right? Which we know can't be done. What we're doing is learning not to follow and allow a thought to evolve and develop, right? We're coming, working on our focus and concentration to the point that thoughts pop up, and lots of thoughts will pop up, and then we just let them float by.
Well, I think
absolutely.
I think it's a little deeper than that. I mean, I think that's a basic beginning, but me, the deeper aspect is the inquiry of it, right? And the there's got to be the inquiry. I mean, I have not been exposed to the willingness ladder. Nicole and I have talked about it a few times, but that's all the further, you know, I haven't been able to explore it really that much. But by listening to the conversation today and the explanation behind it, it sounds, like I said, very, very in alignment with the work. You know, the questions and the turnarounds and applying those in such a way that makes sense. It's got a good feeling to it. It's got a really cool feeling to it, what you're describing. I'm going to have to check it out because I like the concepts that you're going with here. I've been facilitating the work for 15 years, almost longer than I've been doing hypnosis. Yeah. Right. And so, yeah, I've got a real affinity towards when I hear things like that, it just feels good. That's awesome work, Howard.
Thank you. Well, I would love to see what you think of it. It's kind of funny because if I go back to the origins of it, it really came from me watching a demo that I saw Jørgen Rasmussen do.
Really?
And he basically, he was working with someone. Actually, it was when COVID came out as though it was an album.
When COVID was released.
Yes, the that was
the, that was of the 2020.
It's terrible, isn't it? I saw a demo and I can't remember where or when, but he was talking about a guy who was getting very, he was working with a guy who was very anxious about the thought of what if he got COVID and couldn't breathe. And was like, and Jürgen, because his framing is good and he's excellent at what he does and he knows how to like know when someone is right there and then, and just, he kind of was like, do you want that thought? No. And he's like, could you look forward to that thought? And I thought, yeah, come off it. You can't, that's ridiculous. You can't, yeah, come. And the guy was like, oh yeah, I think I could. And I was like, what just happened? Because I like, you know, my willingness had to have six questions. He did it in two. And I was like, okay, that's ridiculous. But I'm sure you can get some people there quickly in two. Mm. But for me, it was kind of unpacking what are the mental shifts that I would have to do in order to go from there to there? Mm. And can I, it was more for my own benefit. Could I find a way of doing it in stepping stones that each question, the move from one question to the next is so subtle, it moves them just a touch forward so that by the time you get to, I can look forward to it. It's not, there's no knee-jerk response. There's no, it's, oh, okay, yeah, I get that because we've led them. So it was more about building stepping stones into willingness. But yeah, all kudos to Jürgen. You know, it was really cool.
Right, you know, on.
Quite inspirational to see. Out.
I like your inspiration and I certainly like the way that it feels in the conversation. So good on you.
Cool.
Thank you.
All right. I know it's getting late for us and and fuck positivity. So we're going to wrap it up. Thank you so much, my friend, for joining us again and for being our first returner and sharing your wonderful thoughts and process and tool that you've got out there in the world. We will put a link in the show notes, but just to give you the spotlight, where can people find it and you?
It's a good question as I quickly go to my web and remind myself of the URL. Okay, so it will be in the link, but it's a slightly strange one. If you want to get the willingness ladder, it's rcw.rapidchange.works/willingness. rcw.rapidchange.works/willingness.
It's easy to remember.
Or just click in the show notes.
As easy as that, yeah. Lots of love. Yeah. Love to the family. Thank you so much for being here. And we will be in touch. Take care, everyone. We'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast. Don't forget to leave us a review and follow us on Facebook. You can also join our mailing list at hypnotichealers.com.